Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Anything you want to discuss in the National Football League and, of course, the New York Football Giants. We're on to the divisional playoffs, but one more day of recap as the Giants fall in a disappointing loss to Green Bay, 38-13 in the wild card round. The 2016 season is unfortunately over. And, Lance, you were here with Paul yesterday breaking down the game a little bit. And I thought a good way to kind of go through this was to kind of recap what we did on Friday, talk about what we thought the reasons were going to be if the Giants were going to win the game, and then see if those things came to be.
What essentially came to fruition based on what we were talking about on Friday. And some of the things that we talked about on Friday, John, was the fact that you wanted to see the Giants be able to pound the football on the ground and be able to set the tone on the ground. Only wound up with 17 carries. Part of that was because they were playing from behind for the majority of the second half. Ball security was another thing that we emphasized as well, and they wind up with two turnovers.
Yeah, let's take those one at a time because we talked about it heading in. One of the important things you're going to have to do in this game is, in a broad sense, play well. You weren't going to go into Green Bay, play your C game, and come out with a victory. That wasn't going to happen. This wasn't going to be the Cleveland Browns back in Week 11. The Packers are a good team. They have Aaron Rodgers. You were going to have to play well in order to win. And as you look at the facets of this game, and I think the one you started with is the perfect place to start, Lance, running the football. You know, we talked about how if you're going to end up being in a game where Eli was going to throw the ball 40, 50 times, you were probably going to be in a little bit of trouble and the game wasn't going the way you were going to go. And lo and behold, Eli throws the ball 44 times. You run it only 17 times, just 70 yards on those 17 carries, 11 of those coming on an Eli Manning run. So the running back's just 16 for 59, which is well under 4 yards per carry. And against the Packers defense, yes, the front is good, but their rush defense overall has not been great the second half of the year. They could not get anything going and carry that momentum over from their good final regular season game against the Redskins. And Lance, once that happens and you're putting your quarterback into must-pass situations on third down and then second and long, you're going to run into problems.
Yeah, well, you become essentially predictable to the defense. Yeah. Not necessarily where you're going to go with the football, but they know Eli Manning is going to be throwing the football 99% of the time. And I think that took a lot of pressure off of the Packers' defense. They could get a little bit more creative in terms of their pass rush, which we saw with Clay Matthews. He was relatively quiet in the first half. Then all of a sudden, he started to get into rhythm in the second half. That's why you want balance. And even in games where they weren't necessarily running the ball effectively throughout the course of the regular season, but they stuck to the run.
Yeah.
They were winning those ball games. And the money stat that we even threw out on Friday, and I'll emphasize it again, 7-0 when the Giants ran the ball more than 25 times in a single game this season.
Absolutely. Another stat you had, the Giants were 7-0, I believe, when Eli Manning had a quarterback rating over 90.
Right. Exactly.
And in this game, Eli Manning had a quarterback rating of 72. And when you take a look at it, Lance, I don't think it was his fault.
No,
I mean,
not at all.
Eli Manning played an excellent game in the first half. He got very little help from his wide receivers. He had two drops that should have been for touchdowns. He had a third down play to Odell Beckham Jr. that should have been caught. Jerry Reese said it yesterday. Ben McAdoo said it yesterday. Eli was in a good rhythm in that first half. And they dominated the game for about 27 minutes. The problem was after those 27 minutes, the Giants had 6 points.
Well, and they had in the first half, just piggybacking off of your point, 3 opportunities in Green Bay territory, and they only walked away with 6 points.
Correct.
So that's obviously not a recipe for success, especially when you're going up against a prolific offense. But
And red zone offense, by the way, has been a problem the whole year.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, what else has been a problem, John? And I brought this up yesterday. The thing is, we magnify now the issues that we saw in the regular season when it comes to the playoffs. But
Bingo.
These are the same issues that we talked about time and time again during the regular season. We talked about the yardage was there, but the yardage didn't translate to points this regular season. What happened against the Packers? The yardage was there. They were moving the ball.
In the first half.
In the first half, but they couldn't punch it in. Mm-hmm. So that was something that we brought to the forefront. Self-inflicted wounds, procedural penalties, when you seem to be getting into rhythm and then you shoot yourself in the foot. There were 2 false starts against the offense in this game, and then all of a sudden that sets up some third and longs and so forth as a result of being behind the eight ball on first and second down, and then turnovers. That's another thing that we talked about. Now, I don't think the turnovers dictated this game because they came late in the contest. But with that being said, you have all those issues, and then you have a -2 turnover differential at the end of this game. it's hard to overcome those issues when you're going up against a quarterback that is just unbelievable right now. 22 touchdowns, no interceptions in the last 8 games.
Yeah, and
it's
really
hard to overcome that.
And I had a chance to talk to Cease Spagnuolo just in the cafeteria yesterday, and he basically said that when you take a look at it, Aaron Rodgers in the second half got hot. And I said, the first thing I said to him in the cafeteria was, boy, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie picked the wrong game to get kneed in the thigh.
Yeah, pretty
and
much.
And he goes, absolutely. Then he said, but John, you know what? The way Rodgers started throwing that ball in the second half, it might not even have mattered. That's how good Aaron Rodgers was. Now, I think Steve's just, you know, coming off a game, and there's really no way to tell how things would go if everybody's healthy, and I agree with that to a certain extent. But, boy, here's the thing, man. Once they saw Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie out of that game, and we talk about health being something that's kind of helped the Giants all year, one of their best players went out at the wrong time, and they had trouble recovering from it because once they saw Trevor Wade and Cody Sensabaugh and Randall Cobb in the slot, they went after him again and again and again. And then late in the game, I think we saw it on a couple of those deep crossing routes. Steve Spagnuolo saw that, decided, you know what, I'm going to go to more zone defense and I'll put those guys inside in a position to have to cover man-on-man. And then what happens, they drag those guys across the middle of the field against those deep zone coverages. Rodgers buys time. You're not going to cover forever. And that's how the Packers got a couple of those late touchdowns.
Yeah, when Rodgers did most of his damage, I mean, it was pretty much off of a slant, John. That's really what it was. You had Randall Cobb. You had Devontae Adams. They hit Jared Cook over the middle. So you're right. They did work the middle of the field when DRC went out. And we saw that at times last season. I referenced the Redskins game last year. DRC went down. That was a big game. It ultimately wound up helping the Redskins win the division. And right after DRC goes out, Kirk Cousins goes deep down the field to DeSean Jackson. So, you know, unfortunately, you don't like to see that happen during the course of the game. However, with that being said, in fairness, while the Giants did lose DRC, the Packers lost Jordy Nelson. So
correct.
You had each team lose an integral part of either their offense or their defense in this contest.
It seemed to me the impact hurt the Giants more than
absolutely.
The impact hurt the Packers.
Because
no
the
question
other Packers
about it.
Wide receivers stepped up.
Correct. A couple other things we talked about, the way the Packers are going to scheme against the Giants. A lot of two safeties deep, didn't blitz a lot. That came to pass again. The Giants got them into some single high in that first quarter because they really like to blitz on third and medium and third and short, and when the Giants got them into a lot of those in the first quarter, the Packers blitzed. That's how they got some of those opportunities down the field. But once you got deeper into the game, especially after the Packers got the lead, they had two safeties deep. The Giants could not run the ball to bring that safety up into the box. And in the second half, Giants offensive line protected the wild in half number one. Half number two, you saw the defensive end start to cause some havoc. Eric Flowers got beat a couple times, turned into fumbles. And then a mental error by Paul Perkins, not picking one of those fumbles up, despite the fact there was no whistle. And I was in the stadium. I can confirm there was no whistle on that play. And all of a sudden, you lose a turnover battle. That was one of the first things you mentioned too, Lance. You cannot go into another team's stadium, be -3 in the turnover ratio, and expect to win. It's not going to happen, and that's how you lose 38-13, even if some of the periphery stats weren't that lopsided, and the score was, because you're -3 in the turnover margin against a good team against Aaron Rodgers. That's just the way it goes.
Hard to overcome that. Plus, remember, this was also a team, and we talked about this last week, John, during the winning streak, which has now since been extended to
15
seven
and
games.
One.
There we go. 15 takeaways, one giveaway. They were +14 in terms of turnover differential. So you know this team is hot. You know this team is opportunistic. The last thing you want to do is give them gifts. And here's another thing. While this doesn't go down as a turnover, think about this. The way special teams played out in that game, that was essentially a turnover because it gave Green Bay favorable field position, and they capitalized on that. Once again, those are things that don't show up in the box score, but if you watch that game, you watch game flow, special teams essentially, to me, translated into turnovers in this game.
And that, to me, goes back to playing well. And that's why I said at the beginning, you have to play well in these games. That's why when people call up and they say, oh, I'm so sure this is going to happen. I'm so sure this is going to happen. And I say, guys, it's football. On paper, it might look like, yeah, this makes a lot of sense, and you can analyze it that way. But to say with any surety that something's going to happen any week, it's just hard in this league. I mean, who would guess that Odell Beckham's going to drop two passes, one for a touchdown, that Sterling Shepard's going to drop a touchdown pass, that Brad Wing's going to easily have, in my opinion, his worst game as a New York football giant in the playoffs. Pro Football Focus graded Odell Beckham Jr., his worst ever game in the National Football
League. Really, his entire career they graded it. Wow.
Entire career. How would you ever guess that's going to happen in a playoff game? You know, these are things that you can't predict. You have to play well. And the Giants did not play well. You could argue that this is one of their three or four worst performances of the year just in terms of how they played. Turnovers, red zone, dropping passes, unforced errors.
Yeah.
And we talked about how in that first game against the Packers, the Giants left so many plays out there on the field. And if they would have made those plays, the game result would have been a lot different. Well, what are we talking about today after the playoff game? Same exact thing. The Giants did not make the plays that were there. They did not execute well enough, and that's why they're at home.
It adds up to so much when you look at the course of this game. You know, everybody likes to look at one facet after a contest and say, oh, it was all because of this. You could point to offense, special teams, and defense in this game. I think everybody chipped in and contributed to why the Packers were victorious and why it became a lopsided game. And when you have breakdowns and you have issues in not just one facet, in three facets, like I said, it's very difficult when you have the opposition clicking and nothing seems to be going wrong for them to wind up overcoming that. And, you know, Paul and I hinted at this yesterday, John. There's really two turning points in this game where you saw all of a sudden things start to tilt. It was when Bobby Rainey was stopped on third and one, and then the Packers had enough time to then get the Hail Mary touchdown.
Agreed.
That, to me, was a big turning point. The other turning point to me in this game, which, once again, everything seemed to be trending in the direction of Green Bay, Giants pull within one. Tavares King gets the lengthy touchdown after a big defensive stop.
Yeah, the game turned back to the Giants after the stop and the King touchdown. Right.
Because, see, the Packers get the football to start the third quarter, and you say, oh, wow, they got an opportunity now to make it a two-touchdown lead potentially.
Right.
The Giants do their job. They get a three and out. Okay, you get the Packers off the field.
A couple great plays by Landon Collins on those third and fourth and one spots.
In terms of open field tackling. Then the Packers wind up getting the football back, but what happens? Third and one, fourth and one. Landon Collins comes through. Damon Snacks Harrison has about five guys on him. He says, I'm feasting, I'm eating, leave me alone. He gets into the pile. Aaron Ripkowski, Ty Montgomery have nowhere to go. Okay, hey, huge momentum shift here. Great field position for the Giants,
here comes
right?
Tavares King.
Boom. Two plays later, Paul Perkins gets no gain. Then the next play, Eli Manning hits Tavares King deep down the middle. Okay? So now you got a one-point game. All right, now maybe things are starting to regroup back in your favor. And then what happens, John, in the span of three plays, it seemed like 3 seconds, Aaron Rodgers.
Four plays, excuse me. That's okay.
No disrespect.
It was so fast.
It was so fast, though. It seemed, because you know why they ran the ball on the first one, and
correct,
it was no gain. But after that, it was Jared Cook, 13, Davante Adams, 20 yards, and then Randall Cobb, 30. And then all of a sudden, a 14-13 game becomes 21-13. Packers get that comfort zone again, and they did not look back. Those are the two turning points of the contest.
2 minutes and 23 seconds, they got the touchdown, and then the Giants, they had to come back and answer. They couldn't. They got a nice 7-yard play on first down. Then they pass, and this goes back to the running game, folks. Second and three on your own 10. Should you really be passing it twice there? But the way the Giants had run the football, why would you have confidence they're going to be able to run for the first down? Because they couldn't run the ball consistently. So you pass it twice. Both are incomplete. They both are intended for Will Tye. One was deflected. And all of a sudden you punt. And then the next drive, the Packers take 5 plays. To go a total of 23 yards for the touchdown in just 1 minute and 29 seconds because Brad Wing has his punt returned. Again, this is not necessarily on Wing. This was punt coverage and kick coverage, which is also bad in this game.
Yes.
They bring it back, and the Packers are starting to keep their drive in Giants territory at the 37-yard line. So, and that sets up a field goal, and then all of a sudden, it's a 3-score game instead of a 2-score game. And then all of a sudden you have to throw the ball. Eli gets sacked, turns it over, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You got problems.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ball game right there. And you just talked about the coverage. The combination, which was deadly to me for the Giants on special teams, was Brad Wing, like you said, did not play very well, had his worst game. But then on top of that, he was put in a position, John, because of field position, where, remember, the Giants had 2 drives where they started from their own 3 and their own 8 because of Dwayne Harris and Bobby Rainey's decisions.
And by the way, the Packers punter did a great job in that game, too.
He reversed field position, if anything. And Jerry Reese brought that up, by the way, in his press conference, because they referred to Brad Wing as a weapon all season long. And
he was.
Deservedly so.
Yeah.
But who turned out to be the weapon in this game? It was the Packers punter. because he had also some difficult field position to work with, and he then gave the Packers defensive flexibility. But when Brad Wing is backed up into the end zone, because if you start drives from the 3 and the 8, and then you go 3 and out, you're not giving him any more wiggle room. So he winds up punting deep in his own end zone. You get a 37-yard punt. Yeah, the Packers are going to take over in Giants territory under those circumstances.
And then bigger picture, Lance, this will be the last thing we say before we get to your calls at 201-939-4513. If I would have told you before the game that the Giants were going to score 13 points against the Green Bay Packers, who over the course of the last month of the year had one of the worst defenses in the NFL.
Decimated by injuries, too.
Do you think the Giants would have had a chance to win scoring 13 points?
No, I would have told you no.
Absolutely not. Now, maybe if, didn't guess the Cowboys had only 7 points back in week 13 or whatever it was. Yeah, sure. But you... And this is what a caller said last week, and he goes, well, John, maybe we can win 13-10. I go, yeah, you can, but do you want to force your defense to have to hold Aaron Rodgers to 10 points or 7 points? Hell no, it's hard.
A lot of pressure.
And everything has to go right. In order to do that, your specials have to be great, your defense has to be great, your offense can't turn it over, because once any one of those things breaks down, you'll get some easy points. That's maybe not even the defense's fault, but holy cow, Lance, I mean – it's 13 points, and that now is, going back to the regular season, 6 straight games without scoring 20, right?
Correct. Yes, bingo.
Going back to the game against the Cleveland Browns, that's the last time the Giants scored 20 points against the Browns, and this is what's so frustrating about it. You tell me which one of these teams have really good defenses. Steelers.
Up and down.
Cowboys.
Up and down.
Detroit. They've given up 40 points in 3 straight weeks.
Very up and down, too.
Philly. Washington.
Philly struggled.
Green
Washington
Bay.
Struggled.
These aren't good defenses here. And Jerry Reese said it yesterday. Let me read his quote. I have it right here. His first question in his press conference was about the offense. This was the question. Where do you think the offense fell short this year? His answer. I think it's a little bit of a mystery about that. I thought that the offense would definitely come in and be able to score more points than we did. I thought we had some yards, but we settled for 3 points too many times. In this league, when you get in the red zone and green zone, you have to score touchdowns and put teams away. Specifically against the Packers, he continues, last night, if we go up 14-0, we're in pretty good position right there, and we didn't get a chance to do that, and all they had to do was make one play, and they were back in the game. They did,
yeah.
And that hurt us. And that really, Lance, has been the story of the last half of the year. The offense cannot sustain success over an entire game. I ought to have to go back and look at it. Maybe you have it on your chart. How many games did the Giants have less than 300 yards of total offense this year?
That I'd have to look up. That I did not chart, but I'm sure it's a lot off the top of my head.
It's got to be 5 or 6 games, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, in this day and age in the NFL, to not get 300 yards in a game, that's bad. It's bad.
There were a number of games where they just could not move the ball, and then there were other games, in fairness, as I mentioned, where they were moving the ball, but then the problem was it would stall when they'd get into the red zone. So you really had a double-edged sword there.
Right. They had 365 yards against Green Bay, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, 365 yards, but they couldn't score any points. And more specifically, I'm curious to see what their first half numbers were. I think they almost had 200 yards of offense in the first half.
The Packers had 7 total yards in the first quarter. It was extremely lopsided.
In the first half, the Giants had 203 yards. For half, that's wonderful. That means you're going to get 400 yards of offense for the game. They had 6 points and 200 yards of offense in the first half. You're not winning games that way.
Whereas, think about this. The Packers went from 7 total yards in the third quarter to 399 in the final three. Whereas the Giants, you said they had 203 in the first two quarters, mm-hmm. and then they finished with 365. So think about total yardage in the second half for the Packers versus the Giants. We're talking about night and day. If more than half of the Giants' yardage came in the first two quarters alone.
The Packers, let's see, in their final three drives of the second half, so they got the ball with 7:18 in the first half, excuse me. They got the ball with 7:18 remaining in the second quarter. They went 22 yards on their third-to-last drive. Then they went 38 yards. And then, of course, you had the Hail Mary drive, which turned into 80 yards.
Which was a lengthy drive, by the way, too, which people forget. It wasn't like one play. They had taken some time to get into that position.
They ran it twice, by
exactly.
the way. They had a 9-yard run, a 6-yard run. They had a pass over the middle of the Cobb on the slant. And then they had Montgomery, a short pass as well. And then, of course, they caught the break. And that's the last thing I'll touch on in a second. But so the Packers basically put 140 of their 147 yards, like you said, in their last 3 drives of the quarter. So at the 7 minute mark in quarter number two, they had 7 yards of offense, like you said. I mean, but you're only up 6-0. That's the problem. If you dominate like that against any team, especially a good team, you have to take advantage of them. The Giants just failed to do it. And then finally, I'll say this. And we talk about this all the time, and Giant fans kill us when we do it. When we talk about certain breaks the Giants get in certain games and how this helps the team win. And then we say, that's okay. You need breaks to win. That's the way the league goes. The teams that wins the Super Bowl every year gets breaks. It doesn't matter if it's the Patriots or the Giants or the Steelers or the Saints or the Packers or whomever you're talking about. And in this game, the ball did not bounce the Giants' way. They had some bad luck. And you want to go through some of the plays with bad luck? Let's go right ahead. That was a very bad call on the forward progress being stopped on Montgomery in the second half. It's a bad call. Should not have been made. If anything, rule him down by contact and at least give your replay official upstairs the chance to overturn it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At least, because it was clear on the play, the referees had no idea what happened. Because it took them about 20
they
seconds of huddling.
They had a conference for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, but nobody made a call on the field. Yeah. Nobody was calling them down. No one was calling it first down Giants. They had no idea. So they figured it out, and that's fine. Sometimes nobody's in position to see it. That's how sight lines work and angles work. That's okay. But at least give the replay official a chance to, you know, make a decision on that. So that's just one of the examples where, you know, it did not necessarily go right. And the other play that you're looking at when the thing didn't necessarily go right for the Giants, I'm having a brain lock here. What was the other play that harkened back to 2011? You had the play with
the Hail Mary
progress. And the Hail Mary. Thank you. That was the other one. Yeah.
Favor,
and,
yeah.
And the Hail Mary, that's obviously, which is also poor execution on the Giants because Eli Apple left Randall Cobb, looked at the pile.
Snuck behind.
Right. No one really got off their feet to jump and knock the ball down. I think Landon Collins told me yesterday, I talked to him on an interview you'll see on Giants.com next couple of weeks, they thought he overthrew it. It was going to go out of bounds. They thought the ball was going out the back of the end zone. So they screwed up on that. But look, there's luck involved in that too, the same way there was luck involved when Akeem Nicks caught the Hail Mary back in 2011. So the breaks did not happen to go the Giants' way in this game, which hurt them too. And a lot of times, bad play goes along with not getting breaks. When you play well, you tend to get more breaks. It's just kind of the way the world of karma works.
Yeah, it's the way the ball bounces too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you could go back to 2011 in addition to the Akeem Nicks play. I mean, you think about the Ahmad Bradshaw forward progress call in the San Francisco 49ers game in the NFC Championship. That was a huge call too in terms of his forward progress ended, but then he wound up coughing up the football. You know, that changes and decides ultimately the outcome of the game. So
I was joking after the game that this was like the revenge
exactly,
for 2011.
Because it was the reversal.
Game.
All the things that went in favor of the Giants that year went against them in this game. It was
really
all
did.
Bottled up. But the reason why I think it's important that you brought that up, John, is from a Giants fan perspective, you have to put things in perspective. And when your team does well and goes on a run, you realize the team benefits from certain aspects. When things don't get wrong, that's maybe a reason because your team didn't benefit, which means that's how the game is played. And that's also what I always say about how parity is the headline word to describe the National Football League, because the difference between two teams is so minuscule, so minute, that sometimes it takes these how the ball bounces type of scenarios to determine outcomes of games. And we saw another one on Sunday.
And it's why it's so hard to win. There are so many unknown factors that you can't control. That happens in that 60 minutes of football. Now, the Hail Mary you can control a little bit. Don't get me wrong.
In terms of being in a better position and so forth. Yeah. Though the Packers have been very good at executing those plays,
amazing,
by the way.
In general, though, there are things you can't control over the course of the game. It happens. You got to deal with them and overcome them. And the Giants, because of their poor play, were not good enough to overcome them. 201-939-4513. You can, of course, chime in on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. Let's get to your calls. And before we do, just want to remind everybody what I said to you in the Friday show. You're mad, you're disappointed, you think you could have went a long way this year, I get it. Remember this, before the year, if I hand you a contract that's at 11-5, first round playoff exit, I'm guessing about 97% of you would have signed it.
I think that's safe to say.
Drew in Virginia's up next. Drew, how are you, pal?
Hey, guys, how you doing today, John, Lance? How's everything going?
Doing well, Drew. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, man, let me make a quick comment before you guys chime in, man.
Sure.
And then I got a couple of questions. You know, Eli's taken a bit of a beating from the fans and from the press this year, including me, even though I've always been an Eli fan. But I just want to say this, man. Kudos to Eli. And Eli reminded us why he's a two-time Super Bowl champion. Now, collectively, yes, the team lost this, and I understand that, and Eli will be the first to tell you, but this is my thought as a fan. Eli didn't lose this game. The guy came to play. You saw it right from the start. He was crisp. He was right on time. And so, hey, man, thank you, Eli. Thank you, Giants, for giving us this season. It was a heartbreaking loss. But, hey, considering the last couple of seasons we had, I'll take this. Now, I got a couple of questions.
I think we agree with you on that, by the way, Drew.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Thanks, man, because, yeah, I felt like Eli reminded people who he is. Cruz, I'm going to say this. I don't know what the future holds for Cruz. I hope he stays, but I got a feeling he's probably not. But, you know, hope he stays. But I just want to say thanks, Cruz, for everything you've given us. I do hope you come back. Heck of a guy, heck of a character. And then lastly, Matt, well, you know, two other things. We definitely need a left tackle. I don't know how we're going to fix it. I don't know what's in the draft, whatever. I'm not making all of these, but we definitely need a last tackle. I mean, I'm sorry, a left tackle.
Well, Drew, can you hold on 1 second? I want to play something that Jerry Reese said yesterday that I got ready for today's show because I knew we were going to get an Eric Flowers question or two. So this is what the general manager yesterday had to say about Eric Flowers. Let's listen in.
Eric is, he's played basically every snap since he's been here. You know, he's an early out junior. He's still a young player, but it's time for him to you know, show us the fruits of being a first-round draft pick. And I still think he has a chance to do that. We'll evaluate that. You know, is he the left tackle? Should he be in a different position? We'll evaluate all that. But I do think he's, you know, a big, strong kid that has a chance to be a really good player.
So it's not him. Maybe calling out is a little strong of a word, but he definitely makes the point that it's time for Eric Flowers to play better if he wants to stay out at left tackle. And the surety that, you know, he's had in times past when speaking about Flowers and his future at left tackle, he seemed a little bit more unsure there and open to perhaps investigating other positions for him or other possibilities for the player if Flowers does not show significant improvement.
And Ben McAdoo did allude to that, too, in his press conference, too, that they'd be open in terms of the evaluation process
correct.
And so forth. Yeah.
Right. I listened to both of those interviews, and I heard that, and you know, I agree. But I would also tell you right tackle wasn't exactly a thing of beauty either.
I agree.
You know, we really need to look at our tackles. But, again, you know, I'll leave that for you guys and over the off season, whatever, as to who we need. And then lastly, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to get off the air. I did hear a collective cheer in Dallas as the Giants exited the playoffs. I'm sure Jerry Jones probably called the Packers and said, hey, thanks for getting rid of our arch enemies. And I say that from the standpoint of this. Of course, no one knows what the future is, but I felt like if the Giants could have got past Green Bay's, things would have got extremely interesting. With that, Giants, great season. Appreciate it. Let me make one last point, and then I am going to go. And I just want to say this. I'm a very passionate person when it comes to the game. You know, I throw things. I, you know, flip, you know, like I'm like any other fan. I'm screaming and hollering and cussing. My wife is looking at me like I lost my mind and everything else. I mean, you know, when Odell dropped that first pass, I think the whole neighborhood was like, yeah, there go Mr. Minton, you know. So, yeah, I was screaming and hollering. But I'm going to say this, though. When Aaron threw that Hail Mary and it was caught in the back of the end zone, I'm going to tell you right now, all I did is I just threw my hands up, turned the TV off, came in and listened to the rest of the game on the show because at that time I knew this game was over. That was a killer right there.
No argument.
But again, like I said, thanks, Giants. Thanks for the season. The you know, only way is up, and I do think they'll be on better things. Hey, man, I'll talk to you guys. I don't know if I'll talk to you the rest of this off season, but, hey,
Thank you, John.
Wow, that's a long time.
Thank you, Eli, and good luck to Cruz.
Drew, don't be a stranger. You're always welcome, my friend. Thank you.
Absolutely. And
appreciate it.
I went back and I was listening to some of the Packers answer questions after the game, and they were asked about, do you remember those that are still on the team in 2011?
Oh,
when you're going
I'm sure
back into
they
the locker
did.
Room after Akeem Nicks catches it, what were you feeling, and then what were you feeling today? And they basically said it was absolutely the complete reversal because they felt, and it's easy to say this when you reflect, but they felt also that that game was lost when they were walking back into the locker room in 2011 because the game went from 13-10 to 20-10, and mm-hmm. I'm sure many Giants on this team can relate to that.
All right, let's go to Len in Columbia, Maryland. He's up next. Len, how are you, buddy? Len.
Len's a man of very few words today, apparently.
We got him punching on line
which
four
is
there,
very
Dave.
Rare.
Len going once. All right, why don't you put Len back on hold, Dave? I'll see if we can get back to
him. Stunner already in the offseason.
Well, that moves Drain Atlanta up the depth chart. Dre, how are you? Why don't you Wally Pip Len here for me?
I will do just that.
There we go, Dre. Hey, big opportunity for you.
How's John? How's everything
going? Doing well, Dre. How are you?
All right. Got 2 points. One thing, you know, I looked at maybe in an evaluation process, we'll look at, you know, whether or not, you know, McAdoo would turn over the play calling details to Sully, you know, so he can actually focus on, you know, everything else and let Sully get the flow of the game and start working on that.
You know, Dre, in fairness, you know, I understand what you're saying. And before the season, I said, too, I thought it would be very difficult for Ben McAdoo to handle the play calling and do the rest of the stuff. I got to say, though, his in-game management in terms of time and timeouts and things like that, he was pretty spot on this year, especially for a first-year head coach. I was actually really impressed with how he managed in-game mechanics in terms of time and things like that while calling the plays. I thought he did a pretty good job with it, to be honest with you.
Oh, I agree. I didn't say it was any deficiency, but you know, I just want to see what it actually looks like, you know, for him to actually be the sideline manager as the head coach, to really pretty much, you know, get involved that way and let, you know, Sully handle the play calling.
Well, Dre,
vice versa,
I just want to jump in on that point because I brought this up on the radio postgame show. Number one, I think it's still a very small sample size. I think you got to see maybe two seasons when he does both to determine whether or not there should be a conversation about tweaking it because, once, you're only going by 16 games. And the second thing is, with respect to Mike McCarthy, and he comes from that coaching tree, Mike McCarthy, throughout the course of his tenure as the Packers head coach, has gone back and forth where he started off multitasking, then he surrendered, gave up the play calling, allowed his offensive coordinator take over, only to then take it back. So, I mean, this is year one for Ben McAdoo. I'm sure those conversations may take place, but once again, to me, it's still a very small sample size to say this can't work where he multitasks and it has to be separate. I think we need to see another season and how this offense produces to determine where they want to go.
And Dre, just to add one more thing to that, and we'll certainly let you finish your point. In this game specifically, and you can make arguments for other games during the course of the year, that's fine. But in this game specifically, these players had every opportunity to make plays for scores and touchdowns in this game. I don't think their 13 points can get laid at the feet of Ben McAdoo and his play calling.
Yeah.
Ball's in their hands in the end zone. Catch the damn thing.
Oh, I'm not putting any, you know, catching any aspersions on McAdoo in reference to any of the games, especially the one on Sunday. Especially, you know, because that was all players. That debacle was all the players on offense. Now this is more the one concern I do have in reference to the offensive line. I looked at the free agent pool. Looks kind of
a little
slim.
Shallow, isn't
yeah,
it?
It's not a lot of
little
depth.
Little shallow. And by the way, as of right now with mock drafts, I think only one offensive tackle is supposed to go in the first round.
Right, and all of them are subpar. Technique issues, pretty much the same issues that we have in now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can scream, throw flowers on the right side, and you know, throw them inside, do whatever. But it still doesn't cure the issues that we have because there's really nothing out there. So,
well, Dre, that means you might have to try to get creative. Maybe you have to work out a trade with somebody. Maybe you got to go and sign a veteran that gets cut loose that we don't know, you know, is going to be a free agent that you use as a 1 or 2 year placeholder. But I'm with you. If there's one thing you can point to that I think probably held back the offense, and Ben McAdoo answered this question late in his press conference, which I thought was interesting. It was actually a question from Mike Garofalo, who used to be with Fox Sports and The Record. Now he's with NFL Network. And the question he had was, let me see if I can find this game for you. It was actually a really, really good question. I can't. can't seem to find it.
What
here.
Was the topic? Do you remember?
Jerry, why don't you finish your point, and I'll find this for you, all right?
Right. All right. My last question is, who will be the casualty to keep, you know, who have to be, you know, a roster casualty to keep Hank and JPP? Because JPP already said he doesn't want a one-year deal. He doesn't want to be franchised. But we could franchise Hank and work out a deal for JPP, correct?
Well, JPP and Hankins are obviously the two notable free agents. Jerry Reese was asked, and the exact wording of the question was, is it feasible right now, based on your projected cap space, that you could keep both players? And Jerry Reese's answer was, absolutely, that's reasonable.
Remember, the Giants have a lot of cap space.
They
carried room over from last year, and the cap's going up again a little bit. So they're going to have plenty of money to have flexibility. Now, the question, though, Dre, in terms of roster construction and balance, can you afford to have four players in one position group all making a significant amount of money, and can you build the rest of your roster with that much money concentrated in one position group? That, I think, is a fair question.
Because you also need to take into consideration Snacks and Vernon,
right,
who are already on the books, and now you're going to add a contract for JPP and a contract for Hankins. So four players on just the defensive line, perhaps eating up a lot of your cap space.
Or, if you wanted to, you could go JPP long-term and then do a one-year franchise tag for Hankins, which for a DT isn't that bad. I think it's around $13 million or so. So that's another option if you don't want to tie up money long-term with all four guys.
I understand that. I appreciate you taking my call. Thanks.
Thanks,
Dre.
And by the way, here's the quote when Dre talked about the offensive tackles. And the question from Mike Garafolo is a short answer. That's why I missed it. Will it be a point of emphasis for you this offseason to figure out how to get the ball down the field in the passing game, regardless of how defenses play against you? Because obviously, Lance, we talked a lot this year about
safeties.
The two high safeties, whether it's man under or cover two or whatever, or quarters. They're not letting guys go over the top. And this is Ben McAdoo's answer. You can get down the field. There's things that you can do to get down the field schematically from a passing game standpoint. And then this is the highlighted portion. This is where the very subtle Ben McAdoo exclamation point came in. And this is how we finished the answer. It just takes time to get there. And what does that mean? That means you can run routes and you can do things, get the ball down the field against a cover two shell, against the man under two deep shell. The problem is you have to protect for 4 or 5 seconds to do it.
Yep.
And the Giants offensive tackles, and as he mentioned, it's not just one. Both guys, both sides had issues this year from time to time, have not given Eli Manning the time to do it. So that's something they're going to have to figure out in the offseason. As Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese both pointed out yesterday in their press conferences, we're not, you know, talking out of turn here. This is what the two guys in charge said.
Well, you have Eric Flowers and Bobby Hart still on their rookie contracts. Mm-hmm. Marshall Newhouse is going to be a free agent.
Because he's on a two-year deal, so
correct,
he is a free agent.
So,
and by the way, John Jerry's a free agent, too, at right guard, if I'm not mistaken.
So given the fact that the landscape shows some of the veterans that you've brought in recently are going to be free agents, they have to make decisions whether or not they want to bring them back or else look elsewhere or perhaps experiment in the draft. Remember, Weston Richburg, and I understand centers are different than tackles and guards, but Weston Richburg was a second-round pick. So it's not impossible to say you can't get a quality offensive lineman perhaps outside of the first round.
Easier to get an interior
no
guy
doubt.
Than a tackle.
No doubt. But I think if you go back, and I've seen teams that are constructed with all rookie contracts.
Oh,
and
sure.
Some of them are mid to late round picks, and the guys have actually panned out to be very productive players. So
the
that's
Dolphins,
still,
for example, have who's their second tackle, Lance? Because they have Tunzel at guard. Who's their right tackle now?
Well,
I believe that was a second-round pick, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, they used Juwan.
Juwan James.
Juwan James, but
Tennessee.
They moved him around. Let me
I believe he was a second-round pick, if I'm not mistaken, actually.
You know, he may have been a late first-rounder.
Was he a late first-rounder?
Yeah, I think he may have been a late first-rounder. I would confirm that, but part of me feels like he was a late first-rounder.
Maybe
rounder.
He was. And the same
they
thing
were
for
disappointed with him early, but then he slowly turned the corner.
Let's see.
Which just goes to show you, you know
maybe,
sometimes.
You know, I think maybe he was projected as a second-round pick, and they put him in at the end of the first
round. That
he
moved
up. You might be right about that.
In terms of the rankings.
And I think it's the same thing for the Redskins right tackle. He was a left tackle coming out.
First-round pick in 2014, Juwan James.
Right.
He was 19th overall.
My fault.
And then in terms of they brought in Brandon Albert, of course, in free agency. Tunzel they drafted. They moved him inside. Pouncey and then Bushrod is the other veteran. So some of their other young guys are mostly backups at this point.
Four tackles, by the way, there. Bushrod used to be a tackle, too,
correct,
before they moved
they
him in the guard.
They found a way to move guys around. And you know what? The Dolphins are a good example. It's interesting you brought them up because Miami's a team that showed dramatic improvement in terms of the offensive line. That's actually a big reason why why they made the playoffs this year. Able to run the football with Jay Ajayi and protect Ryan Tannehill, who actually turned the corner. So, you know, it can be done. It's just a matter of having the right mix and having some options that you can toy with and experiment.
Brandon Albert was a guy they invested serious capital in the offseason, and then they used a first-round pick on the other tackle. So, you know, these tackles, good offensive tackles in the NFL don't grow on trees. They have to be investments. You know, you go around the league, there aren't that many Jason Peters out there who are undrafted free agents, and I think he came to the league as a tight end, if I'm not mistaken, and they turn him into a left tackle. Those guys don't show up very often. Usually, to get a really good tackle, you're going to have to either dish out some cash or you're going to have to use a draft pick on him. That's why the Giants picked Ereck Flowers when they did, thinking he could develop into a really good tackle. And by the way, he can still, as Jerry Reese said, turn into a very good tackle, but the time is now. The other guy I was thinking of with Washington, Lance, was Morgan Moses.
Okay.
He's another guy who
was a late rounder.
I believe he was.
I
think he was either late one or early two. He was similar to James, where he was projected, I think, as a second rounder, but it was one of those deals where, like, you know what, we really need an offensive tackler. We're going to move him up. Let's see. He was picked NFL entry. Let's see.
They even list that?
They should.
Let's see. I'll bring it up on another screen.
No, they don't
see
have it
here
on the selected. Depth chart
I'll
page.
Bring it up here. I got on this website, they usually give the draft section. While I'm looking that up, the other reason why the Redskins are a good example to bring up, how about Brandon Scherff? They eventually moved him inside when they were projected to perhaps utilize him as tackle, and he made the Pro Bowl this
Morgan
year.
Morgan Moses, 66th pick in the draft. So there you go. He was a mid-round pick.
And he is their starting right tackle right now for the Washington Redskins.
So like you said, you
third
can,
rounder.
You can find guys now. You can, but it's tough. And he didn't also, I don't think, start right away either. Did
no.
Morgan Moses.
They moved him around as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because of injuries and so forth.
939-4513. Len called back, so let's get to him. Len, he's on line four. Len must have chased a deer out of his backyard with his rake, and now he's back on the phone. How are you, Len?
Well, I'm disappointed and frustrated, but thank you for the nice one-liner there, and I appreciate you getting me back on.
No problem.
Great to be talking to you guys.
Yes,
Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Happy New Year.
Look, everybody else is expressing it. That's called the last 2 days. Disappointed and frustrated.
You just didn't play well enough, Len. It happens.
No, I know. Let's start off from the top. The Packers are better. It wasn't a good matchup. I said that last week. Lance, I think you were on with David one day. And I said I just didn't think a 3-4 defense fits us. We were getting beat all year long by 3-4 defenses. They're just so big up front.
Now, Len, in fairness they actually weren't in their 3-4 base the whole game. They basically had Nick Perry and Clay Matthews as their defensive ends and a four-down lineman, two linebacker alignment. So they really weren't in their base defense much that entire game, which is why, by the way, the Giants should have been able to run the ball, but they couldn't because they were in their nickel the entire game.
Okay. You want to see it that way, that's fine. Look, we didn't play well. We didn't play smart. Packers are better. It's frustrating. It's going to be a long way back. It doesn't happen every year.
You know, Len, and the shame of it is, too, that honestly, as a team, I think the Giants are actually a more well-rounded team than the Packers. I mean, defensively, they're so much better.
More balanced.
I think the Giants' wide receivers are, you know, probably better than overall what the Packers' wide receivers are. They didn't show it on the field on Sunday, absolutely, but it's hard to argue that Odell Beckham Jr. is not the best wide receiver out of all the players in the two teams. And then you take a look at the running backs. I mean, the Packers' running game has been just as bad as the Giants' running game. So, you know, I think the one edge the Packers do have is the offensive line. But otherwise, besides, of course, Aaron Rodgers, who's
and his mobility,
a freak show,
correct, yes,
and is the most physically gifted passer in football, that obviously levels things out a lot when you have an awesome quarterback like that. But I think the Giants overall probably have more talent if you put both sides of the ball into consideration. I just think the Packers happen to play better on that particular Sunday.
I always respect your opinion, John.
No, that's okay, Len. We can disagree. There's nothing wrong with
Lance,
that.
I always respect your opinion. I want you to know that.
Of course,
I want you
know
to know
that.
Well, actually, Len, to be honest with you, I am siding a little bit more with you. I think John does bring up a good point. No, I think if you look at the overall roster, I think the Giants are much more balanced. I see a little bit more firepower on the Packers' offense. I also see a tight end in Jared Cook that can vertically stretch the field.
All right, Cook
so,
is a good point,
you know,
but I
that's
think,
another person that
but,
I think needs to be brought into the conversation.
I think what gives the Packers' offense the edge is the offensive line. I don't think it's skill position guys.
No, I think the Giants have plenty of talent. I think the offensive line, though, you know, the offensive line for the Packers, Aaron Rodgers, to me, makes up for some of their shortcomings because of his ability to extend plays.
True, but I think Bulaga and Bakhtiari.
They're
both very good.
And he should have been a Pro Bowl for years. Bakhtiari, I don't think has gotten enough credit. And Bulaga's been there. But, you know, outside of that, they've had some guys. They've moved their centers around. Their starting center went down. Filled in.
But
so
their tackles are pretty strong.
Tackles, no doubt.
Len, I'm sorry. We keep interrupting you. Make your point. Sorry.
Okay. No, it's always good listening to you. You guys have a unique take on things. It's, you know, sometimes a little different than my take.
Which is fine.
One thing I wanted to add, it's been 35 years, 1980, by the way, the last time a Giant team didn't score 20 points in a six-game run. And let me tell you, young
good
guys.
Good stat.
You're lucky you didn't see that 1980 team. Your stomach would still hurt.
I was still in the womb in 1980, Len. Sorry, I can't help you.
But here's the good news and all that. We made the playoffs the next year.
Good point.
Yeah, okay. Look, you know, I thought Jerry and, you know, McAdoo, who did really good jobs this year, and I thought they did a great job yesterday in their interviews.
So did I.
You know, very pointed. I thought they answered the questions.
Yeah.
Jerry, in particular, the whole organization had a good year.
Well, you know, Len,
from top to bottom.
Len, and the thing about
it is, really a terrific year.
I think a guy Jerry.
Let me say real fast.
First
answer, and you played it back, or you read it back. No, maybe you played it back. The question had to do with the offense, and God, he said there was no mystery.
Oh, yeah, this was his quote. I can give it to you again real quick. I think there's a little bit of a mystery about that. I thought the offense would definitely come in and be able to score more points. I thought we had some yards, but we settled for 3 points too many times. In this league, when you get in the red zone, you have to score touchdowns.
All right, so he wasn't talking about the game. He was talking about the whole year.
A little of both, to be honest.
I think he was alluding to both.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, the whole year wasn't a mystery. I mean, come on, Jerry. Well, I ask you guys to do one thing. Maybe you can recollect. You don't need to look this up. First play of the game on Sunday, Giants ball. Mm-hmm. You remember what the play was?
I think it was a Perkins run, wasn't it?
Yeah. Do you remember what happened?
I think it was a two-yard loss.
Negative two yards, I think. And then he bounced back with a six-yard run, if I'm correct. But it was. I think the first one was
minus two.
Untouched. Defensive end Daniels blasts through, untouched.
Yep. You're right about that. Nope, no argument. Yeah.
What's the mystery? We knew this from training camp.
Yeah, but Len, here's the thing. Last year, you had the same problem. The offensive line had issues. You couldn't run it, but they still scored a hell of a lot more points than they did this year.
Fix the offensive line.
No, I agree. Look, I'm on board with you, man. I'm not arguing with that.
Fix the offensive line. All right. Here's second point.
Yes, sir.
I hate to point this to Jerry, but did we really think Victor was going to be an outside receiver and match? I'm not saying we should have kept Reuben. I just want the numbers. Did we think Victor would match Reuben's numbers as an outside receiver? What do you think?
Well, I mean, Cruz has had experience playing on the outside before. Did you expect him to get back to what he was in 2011? I think the answer is no.
Well,
I don't think anyone envisioned that he was going to go back to 2011.
No, but I think he was going to be better than he was.
Correct. Well, but here's the other thing. I mean, if you go back to certain games, players have to be productive because of the targets. And there were games where, and I'm not trying to sit here and make excuses, but the facts are the facts.
I know.
If I target a wide receiver like Victor Cruz three times, and then I complain that he only had one catch or 40 yards, it's hard to hold that against Victor Cruz.
And I also don't want to hold that all against Jerry Reese either, Len, because Jerry Reese brings the players in, and then the coaching staff decides how to use them. The coaching staff could have just easily decided to put Shepard outside and lose Cruz in the slot. Now, I don't know if that would have been more effective or not. I don't have the answer to that. I don't have that crystal ball. But I think that is multifaceted if you want to point blame there.
All right. Give me a couple more minutes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hindsight. Suppose we had picked the tall wide receiver from Ohio State instead of Shepard in the second round.
Michael Thomas,
who went to the Saints.
Who was neck and neck with Shepard with touchdowns, by the way. By the way, match Reuben's numbers. And Cruz inside its slot. I mean, you can blame it on the – it's not Jerry. You can blame it on the coaches. He had to make a decision where he thought, if we draft Shepard, where's Cruz going to play? if Cruz comes back. So, look, he had a great – Jerry had a great year. But let's not – we made some choices. And, you know, I know this is hindsight. Did we really think Victor was going to come back if the 2 years off the – look, I love Victor. I mean, come on, we all do. So I'm not picking on him, but you know I'm just wondering.
Well, let me jump in here real quick.
Okay, and then I want to say one more thing.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Lance. I'm sorry.
I am completely with you, and I'm going to reestablish what I just said. I think that the organization is all, and this is my opinion. I think that the expectations were reasonable with respect to Victor Cruz. I don't think they came into this season thinking that he was going to return to his old form and be the savior. But I felt that they figured if he's healthy, he could certainly be part of a trio that's very productive. The other thing that I want to mention about Ruben Randle, who you alluded to. Ruben Randle's not in the NFL right now. And you have to take that in. I know you're talking 60 numbers.
60 receptions, 600 yards, 8 touchdowns.
No, and I completely. But the reason I'm bringing it up is because this is not just the first player that we continue to rehash about how the Giants didn't retain them, and then, you know, we look at where they went and so forth. Randle had an opportunity to make the Eagles roster. Len, he didn't even make the top 75 for that roster. So regardless of what he put up last season, my point is that there's always an evaluation after the year, regardless of the numbers, about what you think you get out of the player moving forward, how the player fits into your system, and the rookies that you bring in could maybe move around and so
forth. And Len, I would add one more thing to that really quick. I think Victor Cruz's failures this year is more a product of this offense as a whole than it is him not being as good as Ruben Randle. If I had to pick right now, you know, let me put it this way. If you took Cruz off this roster this year and you put Ruben Randle on, I don't think Randle puts up better numbers than Victor Cruz. You know what I'm saying?
Or makes the type of key catches
Here's the point, and it ties back to Jerry's first answer yesterday. And again, if Jerry were there right now and I was talking to him, I'd say, hey, listen, thank you. You know, you did a great job.
Of course.
We got to get production out of that second wide receiver slot. We got to get more. It's not a mystery, guys. I mean, what's Jerry talking about? Mystery? It's not a mystery. Now, third. Here's a third. You know, again, you know, if Charlie were here, he'd tell you about. He kept reminding us of it. He was talking about offensive line problems from the first day of training camp, even during the off season. And I thank Charlie for continuing to bring that up. This isn't a mystery. We got to fix the offensive line. We got to get an outside receiver. Jason Witten has probably caught more than 1,000 balls in his NFL career. I know we think he caught them all against the Giants, but he didn't. as did Ertz. He hasn't caught 1,000, but he's caught them against a lot of people, not just us.
Yeah.
Reed here in Washington. By the way, these guys are all in our division. Let's remember that. We're going to play this division in the next 4 years. We're going to play 24 games against our division. We're going to play the Kansas City Chiefs once.
Travis Kelce.
We're looking up at the Cowboys.
Len, I was waiting for the line. You don't play the Jacksonville Jaguars every season. You went to the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm a little disappointed, Len.
I almost started off by saying, Lance, you're not going to like this.
No, I know. Listen, I know your money line. I know your money line. You're talking about you're bringing personnel for your division.
And how frustrated do we get, myself included? I'm not the only fan who thinks differently on this. We all do this. Why can't we stop the tight end? We need to change our thinking. Jerry needs to change his thinking. Instead of trying to figure out how we're going to stop their tight end, we got to spend more time figuring out how we can find a tight end who can do the same thing that those guys can do.
Len,
it's time.
I absolutely agree with you, and I think when you look at the offseason, you highlighted the two areas that I would highlight as well where you want to make the most improvement. And I think you hit it on the head. You're looking at offensive tackle, offensive line, and you're looking at tight end. It's not rocket science.
I want to go back. And again, thank you, Jerry. But what's he talking about? It's not a mystery. Hey, as frustrated as I sound, do I sound frustrated?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I can't tell.
I sound frustrated, and I got to tell you, I'm very disappointed. But let me tell you how old I am. I go way back, okay? So this postseason loss, in my lifetime, this postseason loss isn't in the top 10 of disappointments. I could read you 10 others.
Okay, understandable.
As far back as the middle 50s. But that doesn't make it any better. Man, it's a long way back.
Yeah,
I mean, we got it.
Well, and it goes back to parity.
We
got to
change it. We saw two tight ends last night. Terrific football players.
Yeah. Thank you, Len.
Terrific football players.
We got to run, pal.
All right, Len.
Well, listen.
Give us a call back later in the week.
I think you'll be hearing from
Oh, Dave, you cut off, Len. Don't worry, Len. We know we're going to hear from you later in the offseason. We look forward to it.
Thanks
so much for the call.
He's not taking a hiatus like Drew from Virginia. I can guarantee you.
You know, and he made a good point. I thought Jerry Reese was great. And guys, don't worry. I know we got Kashawn and Joe. We'll give you guys plenty of time. We'll go past 1 o'clock. It's fine. Dave Dominic will wait for his lunch. He'll survive. We'll be okay. Okay. He'll
the
be
sacrifices
okay.
That
he's not happy.
Need to make.
He's not happy,
oh,
but
boy,
he'll be okay.
The sacrifices.
Kashawn, you're up next, and then Joe, you'll wrap up the show, and we'll knock you all out, okay? Kashawn, let's go to you first. But first, I want to make one point to pony up off of what Len said. Jerry Reese, I thought, was so good yesterday in his press conference, and usually he gives you nothing. I think because the team was 11 and 5, he was able to be a lot more honest.
I agree with you.
And I think he was really great in that press conference, and I think we actually learned a lot listening to him. Now, Kashawn, you can vent your frustration for as long as you like. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. Hi,
Len. Kashawn. Good to hear from you. How are you?
John, at the Redskin game when you were leaving, when you were getting on the bus, that was me.
That was you?
I was trying to get you to come over.
I did wave and say hi. If that was you, I would have went over. Oh, now I'm annoyed at myself.
Yeah, I was like, you were probably like, who the hell's calling my name? I was like, oh, he's probably like, that's kind of weird. But I'm like, oh, well.
Well, it was cold out there, too. It was cold out there, Kashawn. I wanted to get on the nice heated bus. Oh, if I knew that was you, I would have come over. Now I'm annoyed at myself. Damn.
It's okay. I go there every year, so maybe next time.
Yes,
I'll
absolutely.
Go there
absolutely.
Well, Kashawn, don't worry. You just learned that John's antisocial, and that's the rest of us I know. So it's all right. He's not willing to admit it, but that's the truth. Now you learned it. Congratulations.
Yes. I, as far as the playoff game, of course, you know, it hurts, you know, and probably because I guess it was just the seeding, but I really, really, really wanted to play Dallas again.
I don't blame you.
That's why I was rooting for Detroit to win the division, because Green Bay Packers, they always make me nervous, and I thought in my heart of hearts that if we played Dallas again, that we would have beat them.
They could have, absolutely.
We had a very, very tough matchup. And to be honest, I really think that the moment was too big for them. I think Eli came, and I was, you know, and I'm always Eli's biggest critic because, you know, he's given a lot, and a lot of times, you know, the interceptions, it kind of gets on my nerves.
And that's fair.
And he throws the ball in the door, the dirt. And I criticize him. I'm not one of those fans that have, like, blind optimism and, you know, can't critique Eli.
Yep.
But I thought that we were going to win against Green Bay and in spite of Eli. But Eli was the only one that showed up. And so I think the receivers, obviously, I hope they learn that going to Miami was definitely a mistake. Not to say that, you know, they're not grown men. They can do what they want to do on their off day. It's just bad optics.
Yeah, Kashawn, and I think you hit it on the head. I don't think, real quick, I want to read you a Jerry Reese quote based off what you just said. Because you're right. I don't think them being in Miami had any impact on the game at all. I don't think them running around, shitting themselves on their camera with their shirts off before the game had any impact on the game. But I will quote what Jerry Reese said about Odell Beckham Jr. because I think it's right on the money, and I give him credit for it. This is what he said. This is what I see. I see a guy who needs to think about some of the things that he does. Everybody knows that he is a gifted player, but there are some things that he has done that he needs to look at himself in the mirror and be honest with himself about, and I think he'll do that. We'll help him with that, but he has to help himself, and we believe he will. He's a smart guy. But sometimes he doesn't do smart things. Let me finish. We all have to grow up at different times in our lives, and I think it's time for him to do that. He's been here for 3 years, and he's a little bit of a lightning rod because of what he does on the football field. But the things he does off the football field, he has to be responsible for those things, and we will talk through it. I know he's a smart guy. I believe he understands that, and he has a responsibility being one of the faces of the franchise. And I think he will accept that responsibility. So, Kashawn, your feelings in that regard and the other fans out there that have that same feeling, you're not alone. Clearly the general manager sees some of that stuff too. And I thought that was two great, great balanced quotes from Jerry Reese right there.
And I agree wholeheartedly with that. And I just, you know, I love Odell to death, but it just was unnecessary. And, you know, he had some crucial drops. As far as Ben McAdoo, and this is kind of like the last thing I was going to say, two more things. I just thought the offense this year was very vanilla. Well, what do I mean by that? I mean, there were times when he would run Jennings up the middle for three straight downs, you know, continuing to have the same wide receiver formations during the year. You got to mix it up, and teams are really smart. Defensive coordinators are very smart. They're going to figure that out about the Giants. And so me with – with McAdoo, I think that he's a smart coach, but I think that probably the play calling, he probably needs to give up the play calling just a little bit. And he probably could focus more on being a head coach. And then lastly, I forgot my last point.
That's okay. Take your time. Defense, offense,
special teams,
offensive line, tight end.
Yeah, we need to upgrade and get a wide receiver. Definitely, we need another tight end. We need to upgrade the offensive line. But I would like to see McAdoo pass the playbook because I think he could be a competent coach. But I just think that focusing, it might just be too much for him. But, I mean, that's pretty much all I wanted to say, guys. I'll be calling in a lot more. But it's disappointing, of course, when the Giants lost. And I thank you guys for taking my call.
Thanks, Sean.
Appreciate it.
Folks, remember, we got – not to depress you now. When Paul Dottino heard me say this, he might, you know, jump off the top of MetLife Stadium. But we probably have about a little under 8 months until our next game. So we'll have plenty of time to break down the offseason and figure out what's wrong and look ahead for today and for the rest of the week even. This is therapy hour for you guys. You guys call in. We'll let you vent. We'll let you say your piece, and we'll talk some Giants football. Finally, Joe in Pennsylvania. He's been holding for a while. Joe, thanks for joining us today. Hope you survived the loss. And what do you got going on today?
Just reminiscing with the game. I just want to say to Kashawn, get a big name tag for next year so you don't forget that when you go to the game there. So, looking at the game, you were talking earlier about breaks, and I always have to bring up the referees. And there was it wasn't too bad, but it could have went our way. I thought Beckham in the end zone, I thought that was the worst interference there. Then the call on Jack Rabbit there that the Giants defense held the Packers earlier on.
Jordy,
what do you
Nelson,
think of that
you're talking
play?
About that play. You're talking about when Janoris Jenkins was called for pass interference, the slight contact with Jordy Nelson. That's what you're referring to?
Right. And then Beckham was in the end zone, and the defensive back wasn't looking at all and was mauling him, and he couldn't get to the ball. If you look at that play, that's a break to me that could have went the other way. And then there was earlier there when it was, I think it was roughing after the whistle there that could have been called against the Packers.
Yeah, I think that was the play where Eli was hitting the face mask. I saw that replay where a hand went into his mask. Listen,
you know, I missed that one.
Yeah,
I didn't see that
if you go back,
at all.
I don't remember. No, I know exactly what Joe's. I don't remember where in the game, but Joe's right. There was. I saw the replay, and one of the defenders reached out, and Eli was hitting his face.
Was it forcible contact? Because
it didn't. To me, it didn't really look like it was that much forcible contact, but it brought back memories of if you remember the Vikings Cowboys game, and Sam Bradford was. and Joe, what I'm gonna say is. And this is the viewpoint that I take no matter who's in the game. It's the human element of the NFL. There's going to be missed calls,
but
I think good teams overcome them.
I call them breaks. Was that the one the penalty flag was thrown on? And then they just said it was picked up. I'm not sure.
No, you know what that was? I think that was a potential offsides on the
Packers.
Yeah,
but it was rough, and then they just used it for
That's what it was. And the flag was thrown. The officials conferred. They picked it up. I think it was somebody had called a timeout. I think it was the Giants that called the that was it. The Giants called the timeout. The Packers were offsides,
that's right.
And they called the timeout before the offsides violation, so that's why the flag was picked up. That's what happened, Joe.
Well, whatever. Some breaks that could have went the Giants' way, I
well,
thought.
Well, here's
and
another one. You know what?
Breaks.
And, Joe, no, you could classify it as break. I'll give you another one. And to me, this is just a matter of good timing. The Packers could have been called for 12 men on the field.
Yeah.
And the guy got off the field just right before they snapped the ball to Brad Wing. That would have been an automatic first down for the Giants.
Right. I said the Giants didn't get any calls their way.
Well, but
so
that's not
I
a matter of getting
breaks.
A call their way. That's just a matter of the Green Bay Packers were fortunate that they hustled to the line.
John's getting frustrated there, I see.
No,
that's
I'm
what
fine.
It was.
No,
no
okay.
Joe, I'm not getting frustrated. I think you just got to look at it from a different lens.
No, Joe, you're absolutely right. Look, so some games you get breaks, some games you don't.
I want to bring up Tavares King there. I know you were talking about, Len was talking about a receiver, and every time he gets in, and in preseason, in these last two games, He shows some speed. He like in the preseason, a slant, he catches it, he goes the way. He's beating the receiver deep. I mean, you got to give this guy a chance.
I think they will next year.
Every time he gets in there, to me.
And Joe, I think next year they will. I mean, look, Ben McAdoo is very effusive in his praise for Tavares King. He said we gave him a chance. And I talked to Tavares in the locker room yesterday before he went on his merry way, and he said, look. When I met him, they told me I did a good job in earning my playing time and making the most of the chances I got. and he hopes to be, I think, be in a bigger and better place next year. Hopefully here with the Giants, he's somebody that the Giants will have to choose whether or not they want to bring back.
But King could very well play the outside, going back to Len's point, if they are in need of a number two wide outside guy.
And by the way, he seems to have passed Roger Lewis on that receiver depth chart,
too. He did, yes.
Right. I just thought he should have gotten a chance earlier. Maybe he could have won a game or two for us. You never know. Could have made a difference. Moving on, because I know you just want to wrap up.
Yeah, Dave's got to
eat. Is DRC on a cut?
Well, that's not our first priority. I'm sorry, who was that?
DRC. Is his contract
up this year? No, DRC is still under contract. I know there's been a lot of speculation in the media, but as far as DRC's contract is, he's on the books. It's just a matter of, you know, if anything gets approached with the restructure, that's the team prerogative, that's the player prerogative. But as of right now, DRC's on the books. He's still under contract.
And, Joe, I think based on this last game, the Giants, if they weren't sure before, I think they're pretty sure now that he's a pretty important factor on this defense.
Right, and then just looking at what causes the win and lose there, the offense, like Paul and that was saying, you never know if we have a fullback. They'll have to decide that this year.
You should read
if Johnson
that quote.
Comes.
No, you know. Joe, you know what? I don't mean to cut you off, but I'm glad you brought that up because that's been something we talked about all season, and that exact question was asked to Jerry Reese, and I thought he gave a very good answer.
Joe, here is the question for Jerry Reese. Do you regret not picking up a fullback after the injuries to Nikita Whitlock and, of course, to Johnson, the H-back? Here's a quote. There are a lot of teams that use tight ends in different ways and not carry fullbacks. This offense doesn't really have a lot of plays where you would play a fullback, just five or six plays a game. The thought was, why carry a fullback if he's only going to play five plays a game? But we will look into it as we move forward and see if that is something we need to have next year. So that was the answer that Jerry Reese had to that, and that was a question we got during the year from fans.
I got that, but if that fullback was in there playing well and helping the running game, he might have been in there 10 more plays.
That's
so,
fair.
That's going on. I did see Jerry Reese did talk, too, about possibly drafting a quarterback. You know, Eli might go five more years, but that it's time you got to get somebody in there that really to be his backup, really, because you never know he is getting older. So
that's fair, too.
And the big difference was there in the Packer game. The ones we won or lost was the quarterback making time there back there, Rodgers. And we just couldn't get to him, which was that's it. So we really have to up the offense a little bit, you know, the score in the red zone. And there was something else, but I know you are cut for time. So
yeah, call
happy
right
New
back,
Year
Joe.
Call in later in the week or next week, Joe.
Yes, I'm here. You know what I mean? It was tough. I didn't want to play the Packers because they're hot and it's a tough place to play. And you ain't going to get the calls. Yep. I knew that. So
happy New Year,
okay.
Joe.
All right, Joe. Appreciate
Thank
the phone
you.
Call.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Same to you. Thank you, buddy. Thanks so much for chiming in.
And, folks, we're here the rest of the week, so you don't have to start looking at free agency and draft picks yet. Lord knows I haven't done any work on them. So we can do Giants rehab for the rest of the week, talk about the game and everything that went wrong. And right, I mean, look, and I'll say this again, 11-5 Lance before the year off 2 6-10 seasons. I mean, how can you get – how can you – I get the disappointment in the moment, but overall – darn good season.
No, team made huge strides, and I mean, it's hard to also overlook how the defense went from the bottom of the rankings everywhere to the top 10 in the rankings everywhere as well. So, I mean, that's obviously a big thing to look forward to, and also the fact that most of those guys are still young and under contract, and you hope that that nucleus can stay together. I think there's certainly a lot of promising things that came out of this season despite the outcome, and that's something that I think, you know, hopefully the team can build upon.
Now, a fair warning, Lance, and I think me and you and Dottino and everyone on the show fell into this trap. What was our story last year in the offseason? It was, they really got to improve the defense. The offense, it'll be fine.
It should stay at least where
it
is at worst. It should stay.
And that's if I were to take one lesson from this season, and I'll talk more about this later in the week, and Ben McAdoo, to his credit, made this point time and time again in the preseason and during training camp. Just because you did something well the year before doesn't mean you're going to do something well the following year, even if you have the same guys.
Yeah.
It's a different year. It's never an identical roster. You just don't know.
Can't predict injuries and so forth.
There's no guarantee that despite the fact you have young guys like you mentioned
on the defense,
talented guys on defense, that you're going to be come back next year and be that same dominant unit.
No, I think that's a good point. And
you
I just said
know.
That on paper it's promising, but that doesn't mean that it's going to translate to the field.
Bingo.
Again.
Very fair. Because we made this mistake last year with the offense. Like, oh, well, who cares? You know, In fact, I said this to many callers when they said, you know, John, we have to fix the offensive line. We have to. I go, well, guys, wouldn't you be happy if the team averaged the same amount of points as last year and got the same amount of yards? They had the same offensive line, so what's the big deal? Well, you know what? Different year, different results, and they were right.
And different way that defense is now defend you, too, in terms of the high safeties and everything.
Bingo.
And who knows what they're going to have to deal with next season
right.
in terms of solving.
So just something to keep in mind yep. moving forward. All right, we'll be back tomorrow. Big Blue Kickoff live at noon right here on Giants.com. For Lancelot, I am John. See you mañana. Dominic's off to get some lunch.